It's episode 191 of the Security Weekly News. Welcome to the week of 27 February 2022, which is the last week of February. We have Aaron Leyland, who's not here, but we're going to talk about him. Erotica Dashing, Judy Records, the Ukraine, and a bunch of scams, along with Jason Wood on this edition of the Security Weekly News.
This is Security Weekly. For security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
Monitoring and maintaining compliance is a never-ending struggle with a high price of failure. FireMon helps customers meet complex and varying compliance requirements. FireMon has fully customizable reporting, analytics, assessments, and dashboards to meet the compliance needs of any organization. With FireMon, compliance reports take a tenth of the time, and real-time continuous compliance eliminates the anxiety and headaches of audit preparation. Improve security outcomes by improving security operations with FireMon. Visit securityweekly.com/FireMon to learn more. Cybercriminals are working overtime. Last year in the fourth quarter alone, phishing attacks disguised as COVID testing information increased by 521%. Barracuda has identified 13 types of email threats and how cybercriminals use them to steal money from your company or personal information from your employees and customers. Find out about the 13 email threat types and how Barracuda can provide complete email protection for your teams, your customers, and your reputation. Get your free ebook at securityweekly.com/Barracuda. That's securityweekly.com/Barracuda. Barracuda.
All right. Well, obviously the news starts this week in the Ukraine. I'm not going to get into any geopolitical aspects, and we're not a political show, but there's been a lot of virtual things going on outside of the kinetic war. One of those things was our good friend, Aaron Leyland, decided he was going to go to the Ukraine, and he went to the Ukraine, and he's trying to help refugees. And if anybody can do it, Aaron can probably do it. And he probably really will have, you know, all the people sitting down at a table eating borscht and drinking vodka and singing old Irish songs before the day is through. So good luck, Aaron. And if you want to donate to Aaron, hit me up on Discord. I'll give you the link to his GoFundMe. He's collecting support for his efforts. But a Ukrainian security researcher leaked over 66,000 internal messages, which belong to Conti TrickBot ransomware. I think it was yesterday they did this, because initially the Conti gang decided to side with Russia in the conflict for some strange reason. The messages were confirmed valid by Vitaly Krimets, the CEO of ADV Intel, who said they were taken from a log server for Jabber that was being used by Conti. The release included 393 JSON files, which contained about 61,000 messages. There was messages since the 21st of January. The messages had stuff about activity of the gang, victims, private data leak, URLs, Bitcoin addresses, and operations discussions among the various gang members. There's conversations about Diavel, and there was 239 Bitcoin wallets, which had about $13 million in payments in there. Conti had, started all this by releasing a blog post which announced their full support of the Russian government invading the Ukraine and warned that they would strike anyone who conducted cyber attacks against Russia. Now, then, apparently Conti gang has some Ukrainian members too, instead of just Russian members, and the Ukrainians got upset, and the message was updated after the Ukrainian members complained, and then it changed to say that we do not ally with any government and we condemn the ongoing war. So I don't know if the Ukrainian members posted that or, you know, and on and on and on, but it's really starting to illustrate the sort of virtual aspect of this whole conflict that's been going on and is probably going to continue going on for a while. The Ukraine, however, in the meantime, is recruiting an IT army, which they say is going to hack Russian entities. And they listed 31 initial targets for this group. The Ukrainian Minister for Digital Transformation announced that they needed volunteers who had digital talents for their IT army who would conduct operational tasks against Russia. This was on a Telegram channel, which releases information and then released additional information, which included the 31 targets, which were Russian government agencies, IP addresses of Russian servers, storage devices, mail servers, three banks' information, corporations which were supporting critical infrastructure in Russia, and Yandex, which is a Russian search engine and an email service that, if you've ever been to Russia, you've probably seen Yandex stuff, or if you live in Russia or any of that part of the world. I think I still have Yandex installed on my phone because I went to Moscow a few years ago. The defense ministry had also been apparently recruiting, quote, the Ukrainian underground hacker community and asking them to also assist in this matter. When the article was written, various Russian websites, including the Kremlin, the State Duma, and the Ministry of Defense websites were offline as a result of distributed denial of service attacks, or at least that's what it looked like. Now, I'm going to go ahead and qualify all this because I was asked this question a bunch yesterday by students. Understand that if you choose to assist the Ukraine's actions, and I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't, although, you know, maybe you should, but maybe you shouldn't, you may well be in violation of the laws of your country in terms of cyber attack. But if you do choose to do it, well, give them hell. I'm all for it, but just saying. I did want to say I applaud all the people who are assisting, and I do have several friends who are in different capacities working on this, trying to help stop this war and all, you know, all the innocent people that are getting hurt in this mess that is unsubstantiated. But, you know, that's me. But if you do decide to get involved, be careful that you do understand what you're doing, that you're attacking the right things, because I was immediately, my paranoid mind went to, if I was the Russians, I would put out attack us, and I would put, you know, like IP addresses of other resources, like, say, I don't know, Joe Biden's home phone or something, you know, and try to get people to do that. But be careful. Be sure you're able to defend yourself. Be sure you understand local laws, and you know if there's any consequence of this, and you know if somebody comes looking for you, like a couple of guys from Brighton Beach show up with ball bats, you know, you might want to be aware of that. And I'm sure you're all grown ups and can take care of yourself. So you know who you are. Good job, everybody. Keep it up. YouTube, Facebook, and TikTok all agreed, reluctantly, I think. I don't think they agreed like, yay, we're for... But they reluctantly agreed to ban Russian state media from their platforms in Europe. They've always had a policy of they kind of stay out of these kind of things, and they just let people post what they want to post. But... And the Russians have always used social media as a major soapbox for public opinion all over the world, including in the United States. But in Europe, they're very heavy influence. And they use these particular outlets to push disinformation, propaganda, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anything that meets their agenda in the guise of news. Not that that doesn't happen on other news networks as well. But the move came after the European Commission, the Ukrainian government, some U.S. politicos, and their own employees began demanding that they do some action to stop this. Obviously, the ban is very likely and has provoked some responses from Russia. Google Europe stated, due to the ongoing war in the Ukraine, we are blocking YouTube channels connected to RT and Sputnik across Europe. RT and Sputnik rely on YouTube pretty heavily and TikTok to drive traffic to their sites from the U.S., from Europe, from wherever they, you know, people are watching this stuff. And TikTok, of course, is Chinese based. A great deal of misinformation was produced by Russian-backed state media outlets about the Ukraine prior to the invasion, and that continues. According to the Oxford Internet Institute at Oxford University, say that real fast three times, at least 30 articles were released on these various platforms that speculated prior to the invasion that the Ukraine was starting or already had plans to develop nuclear weapons amid warnings about what sorts of, quote, dangerous nuclear fantasies President Zelensky had. The Russian state media have continually presented the Ukraine as being Nazis or far-right extremists, despite, you know, the actual makeup of the country. And all this was just sort of, they're coming right for us, they're going to attack any minute, we got to do something about it, approach to war that pretty much everybody uses. You know, it's like you want to invade somebody, you go, oh, you know, there's weapons of mass destruction hidden all over the place. We got to go in there and save the day. And that's sort of what they're doing here. But Russia immediately responded to the ban, and they demanded that the restrictions be lifted. So state media issued a sort of a statement. And then the next day after that, Russia began slowing traffic to Facebook as apparently a retaliation for their fact-checking activities against Russian media sites on Facebook. Twitter said it was also being restricted in Russia. So Facebook and YouTube have also banned advertising from Russian state media at this point. So, you know, the virtual war continues. In the same light, you may want to remind your people that along with people trying to do good, there are also people trying to do harm. There has been a big rise in, as you might have guessed, help the Ukraine scams. The initial ones that were reported in this article are all crypto scams that basically request donations that are being made to help, you know, victims in the Ukraine, to help refugees in the Ukraine. But they at least appear mostly to be whoever's running, helping whoever's running the scam. Some of the attacks were coming from allegedly coming from NPR.org, which is National Public Radio in the United States, which is not you know, going to be supporting wars or anything else. But basically, that was a spoof. There was another one listed. It was from the United Nations Office of Coordination of Humanitarian Domains, which is a an actual thing, OCHA. But again, it was a spoof. So I think these things are going to be very, very prevalent, just like they are when there's any kind of natural disaster or any other kind of world action that gets everybody's attention. Immediately, scams spring up saying help this, help that, and so be very careful where you donate your money if you're trying to donate things to help. In the same light again, malicious spam that warns Microsoft users of unusual sign-on activity from, wait for it, Russia. So Malwarebytes reported that this spam activity basically says, it's an email you get, it says there's an unusual sign-on activity to your Microsoft account, it has a warning, it has a, I looked at one of the layouts, and it has a, it says, you know, an IP address, it says original location, Russia, it says Kali Linux is being used and they're trying to access your device, and then the email has a button that you can report the offender. And there's different versions of this, but there's a button to report the offender, there was an unsubscribe button. Apparently, there were other options associated with this that you could choose in different variations of this. Some of them said you can stop this attack, or, you know, if you don't do something, it's just going to be allowed or whatever. So you can guess what happens when you go to the site. You might want to include this again in your overall warning about the current state of affairs, which hopefully you're probably issuing to people. Now, again, no politics, but, you know, warning people that there's a lot of swindles going on. There's a lot of scams being put together, and other misinformation is being pushed out like crazy all about this war in the Ukraine. Sophos Naked Security monitor scams and all sorts of things like that. And they maintain a list of the top scams. And sextortion used to be their number one, but that's been kicked off the top of the ladder. The current number one scam is frauds targeting Instagram. And the scams have Instagram branding. The most recent ones basically say that you have committed a community guidelines violation and has contact links and so forth. There's another one that says copyright infringement warnings, and they're going to block you on Instagram because you violated copyright, and has a link for a dispute. And there's another one with very similar to the Microsoft one that has suspicious login alerts with a secure a link that says secure your account. And we've seen all these things before. I just sort of reiterated them again. They're just garden variety phishing, but they are very, you know, they are very common right now, and a lot of people are very upset or worked up about all this stuff. But there's another one that they had in here that actually asked for a two-factor authentication code. So basically what they're doing there, and you know, two-factor codes usually only last for a few minutes, but if they've got somebody standing by an automated system that the minute you get phished and it asks you for your two-factor authentication code and you give that to them, you, that person can then get into your accounts and so on. So, you know, if you give up your codes, somebody's on the other end, you know, quickly, And the article goes on and talks about how they might be automating all this. So, you know, there's this, and then you reply with a code, and it just pushes all that through a script. That could work within the time frame of a lot of two-factor authentication and would allow bypassing multi-factor again. The article itself has a whole lot of examples about how to spot these scams, and this might be an article worth passing along to all your users. So it was written in plain language. It's got good examples, so it's pretty useful. So if you want to pass that along, you know, or write your own or whatever, it's a good place to start. Switching from the Ukraine to Chinese-linked APTs, Chinese-linked APTs are apparently and have been targeting government networks at multiple foreign agencies, which were undisclosed in the article. They're using a stealth Trojan, which would allow them to retain access on the network and exfiltrate data long-term. And that doesn't sound like anything new, but apparently this is a pretty interesting and incredibly stealthy Trojan that's sitting out there. So Symantec found this in toolkits that were being used by Chinese attackers who were attempting to compromise various government agencies that I guess Symantec was supporting or analyzing. Symantec named this Trojan Daxing. And I don't know, they didn't put the tones on it, so I'm guessing. So Daxing would mean something like, you know, big and exciting or big and spicy kind of thing. It may mean something else, but that was just, I was like, what is that? Why did they use that name? But the article didn't say, and they didn't put the tones on it, so you don't know which characters those actually are. So it could mean something else entirely. They did call it a tool that is, quote, exhibiting technical complexity previously unseen. Evidence of the malware was found being used as recently as November 2021 and it was particularly targeting government agencies in nations that are, of course, the target of Chinese strategic plans. The article did not say who that was. The article does say that Daxing is a Windows kernel driver that has advanced communications features that would allow it to run on highly secure networks and will allow communications without detection even if the system that's being targeted can't connect to the internet. They claim it's similar to Regin or Regin. I think it's Regin is how you, that's Regin's how I said that, but that's really old. That's like 2014. According to Symantec, the Daxing Trojan can be traced all the way back to 2013, apparently. Essentially what it does is it creates a peer-to-peer network with different machines that have been compromised in the hopes that I guess one of them is connected to the internet. And then because it's all this peer-to-peer stuff, it's running sort of low end, it's hard to detect. Quite an interesting thing. It's definitely worth the read if you're interested in such things. There was not a huge amount of information about how this thing works, but I found it quite interesting in general. Well, he shocked the world with his first work, An Erotic Christmas, which featured muscular, sweaty elves and an anatomically correct reindeer. His follow-up work was entitled An Erotic Easter, which featured sweaty, muscular rabbits frolicking with muscular, sweaty elves and anatomically correct reindeer, and was described as confusing yet arousing somehow by the New York Times. Here with his latest book, An Erotic Fat Tuesday, please welcome Jason Wood.
And this is what happens when you miss your mute button because you're too busy laughing. thank you very much for that thrilling introduction. So, you know, not surprisingly, today's podcast, we are spending a ton of time on Russia's invasion of Ukraine and all the news that's around it. Doug and I were talking about it before the show. You pretty much can't find anything that isn't about that in some way. And honestly, that's really what I've been spending my time reading on, you know, over the last week heavily, as I'm sure many of you have as well. At the risk of beating on this a little bit more, I'm going to go ahead and do it, you know, continue on with the theme around Ukraine. You know, that's where we started. I guess that's where we're going to, well, Doug's got his follow up, but that's where I'm going to end it for our typical stories. Threat Post had an article where they talked about some tools that were released, or attacks that were occurring, rather, prior to the invasion of the Ukraine. You know, we've talked about there's a ton of articles out there about Putin's decision to invade the Ukraine. The entire thing looks staged, you know, was made well in advance of anything publicly, you know, where he got up there and said, oh, well, let's have a council and discuss whether or not this is going to, we're going to do this. You know, honestly, he spent weeks getting troops into position, denying that there was going to be an attack, and then surprise, we're going to invade the Ukraine. They had him all the way surrounded on their border. So, not really a shock. But the Threat Post article talks about and points to a blog post that was written by Microsoft that details some new and novel malware that was released in attacks against the Ukraine several hours before the attacks actually began. So really the online shots started getting fired before real shots started going off. The malware itself is something that they've named Foxblade, and basically it is a Trojan, you know, trying to masquerade as something that people want. They install it on their system, and in this case it has the capability to download and install additional tooling as well as carry out denial of service attacks, which would then of course turn into distributed denial of service attacks, as you know, infected systems would be pointed in large numbers at you know, some kind of target. And so the article itself is fairly straightforward. I mean, it's just kind of really laying out, hey, here's what's going on. Microsoft is talking about their response and, you know, what they've done and put into their tools to try and prevent this from executing. It doesn't have a ton of technical analysis on the tool itself. But it does, you know, it's just another area where this conflict has spilled over or is occurring in not only in the kinetic world, but in the online world. If the article itself actually pivots with about a third of it left to talk about the increased levels of attacks that are occurring out there. There's a lot more different hacking attacks occurring in both directions. Doug's already talked about, you know, Ukraine recruiting for folks to attack Russia, and Russia is attacking against the Ukraine. I've heard grumbles about, or you know, some rumors about other attacks occurring outside of this area as well. So I'm not going to spend a ton of time on that, but what I do want to kind of pivot to is, what do we need to do as defenders? What are we going to do you know, working in security field to try and protect our organizations, you know, what's going on in our countries and our customers and things like that. Honestly, I expect these attacks to spread far beyond the Ukraine and Russia. Putin is talking about nuclear weapons, right? So he's not going to have any compunction about turning people, you know, groups loose and saying, hey, hack the planet. And go after anybody that is somewhat associated with someone else who's irritated him in some way. You know, this is just kind of table stakes here at this point. In fact, you know, related to this and kind of some mindset type of stuff, I was reading an article on Politico today where they interviewed a lady named Fiona Hill, who was a senior fellow at Brookings and was formerly a senior director of the European and Russian Affairs on the National Security Council. So she spent a fair bit of time on this, and they were talking to her about Putin's mindset and how he might approach things. And, you know, this is a quote. The thing about Putin is if he has an instrument, he wants to use it. Why have it if you can't? Yeah, this is aimed at nuclear weapons, but it's obviously going to apply to, you know, the groups he has to perform hacking attacks and cyber attacks and things like that. So I expect to see this, you know, spill over very quickly, particularly if he gets more and more frustrated with how the invasion is going and the world's response to that, and you know, the sanctions and loss of face he's going to feel there. So what can we do about this? You know, there's a lot of discussion about attacking back again. You know, your mileage may vary there. You could go and do like Aaron and fly out there to volunteer to help with refugees. But on defense here, really, what can we do? And I wanted to point at a series of Twitter posts by Mick Douglas, which I will put those into the show notes. I don't have them up yet, but I'll update the wiki with that. Basically, he has a number of messages here about what we can do as defenders for our organization, and to really be highly alert as to what's happening inside of our environments. Now, a lot of his activities are aimed at stuff that we would consider the basics. But honestly, if we look around, basics are stuff that, you know, we all know we should be doing, but frequently get left alone while we take care of other things that we've got people demanding of us. So, you know, here's some examples from his Twitter thread about things to watch for. One, watch for your egress traffic, right? DMZ servers, to his point, rarely are going to initiate outbound connections on their own. They typically respond to, you know, external requests coming in for some kind of content. They're rarely turning around and initiating a connection out. Now, there are things that are different, like mail servers and stuff like that, but a lot of folks are using services to handle a lot of that now and not hosting it internally. But you would still have to make some, you know, adjustments for what's going on in your environment. And that gets to the next one, knowing what's going on in your environment. You know, he made the comment that we need to know what's running on our systems. And so he talked about using something like StrumDump to go through and look and see what applications are running on systems over the last 30 days. Sysmon for Linux, he includes links for that. Some auditing resources for Red Hat, if you're using Red Hat Linux. Really, the whole thrust of his posts is don't be waiting for something to turn red until you've got a problem. Go out there and be actively looking. This is not a time to be complacent about things because this could happen really at any point. We don't know when this is going to, you know, when attacks are going to start running around more broadly. So be on your toes, be actively monitoring. Don't wait for some kind of passive monitoring to tell you that something has gone wrong. I like threat hunting. I mean, that's what I work in and do. Look for signs of post-exploitation, really. You know, again, same thing as the DMZ servers initiating outbound connections. Should an IIS server be running operating system commands? Why would that be happening? So you could start to pivot for that. Should an Excel file be opened up in a Windows command prompt or running wscript.exe or anything like that? Look for this type of stuff. You know, hopefully you have the tools deployed to allow you to get that level of visibility, but use the tool set you have and you have that you're familiar with to dig into your environments and look for signs of issues. Don't wait, get out there and go after it. I don't expect, obviously, Putin is going to back down just because he's feeling dumped on by the world. So I kind of expect him to lash out at some point. So we need to be prepared for this possibility. So again, go check the show notes. You can go check out more information about Foxblade itself. But really that, you know, again, it's just kind of a pivot to their Russia is obviously using this as a domain in their conflict with the Ukraine. Likely going to pivot out to the rest of the world, and we need to be prepared for that. I will update the wiki with Mick's Twitter posts. He's got a whole thread there so that you can check that out and think about your environments. Go take a look and be on your toes.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Everybody that's that, if you want something done about this, be sure you let your political people know that we need to be doing more than just words, and somebody should do something. And I know it's hard to do, but and Aaron, I just want to say to you, be careful. We appreciate you and but be careful. We'd really like you to come back someday. And finally, Judy Records with a D, not an R. I always thought there's an R, and I guess that's why I didn't find it, but I have gone to the site. JudyRecords.com claims to have over 630 million public court records on their site that you can review for free. And I have done that. So if there's, you know, you're trying to find out information about somebody or whatever, it's a really interesting way to do that. They just take, according to their information, they take public information and they publish it on there. So it is public court records. But apparently the disciplinary records of the State Bar of California, which had about 260,000 non-public records of disciplinary hearings of attorneys, was exposed. And somebody, don't know who, took it and they put it on Judy Records. The records contain the attorney's names, the witnesses' names, etc. And Judy Records claims that they only publish public information and has since removed this after they were notified that this was not public information. But it is it's a fun site to play around with if you're interested. You can find out about the hillbilly cannibal Holocaust that happened on the new property you just bought. You know that sort of thing. Anyway, hang in there, everybody. And that's the news. Thanks, Jason. I'll see you on Friday with the wrap-up show. Play me off, boys.